An hour of Bill's thoughts on what's going on in Connecticut. Wake up with Bill Finch. Only on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And we're here live at WICC 600 AM, 95.9 FM. In the studio, I'm happy to announce that I'm joined by Victoria Woodard from the Banned Book Club and Orange Library right down the street here. Good morning, Vic.
Good morning, Bill.
Your episode is at the end of the show, and we want to tease it out a little bit because, again, it's another coming-of-age book that's been banned by the far right in this country. Why don't you tell us the name and keep everybody glued to their seats for another 45 minutes?
Yeah, this week we read Looking for Alaska by John Green.
Sure it wasn't Sarah Palin looking for Alaska? No,
no, I didn't see it from
the front porch. She's ever found it back
I don't know. Got to look harder.
It's so small. So listen, today we're going to be talking again about Earth Day and the Earth movement, the climate movement. And I just want to reminisce a little bit. It was back in 1970, little Billy Finch was 14 years old, and the Pintos, the brothers and the sister Val, and myself and others, they were in high school. I was in junior high school. We organized the students in Trumbull to clean up, pick up litter along all the main roads, and my crew was cleaning out the Pequannock River, which, as many of you know, is a trophy trout stream maintained by Department of Environmental Energy and Environmental Policy. I fish there often. It's a wonderful resource. When you're there, you are recreating yourself, recreating, having recreation there, communing with the beautiful fish and the incredible natural habitat of the Pequannock River Valley, one of the places where biodiversity is stored. And we're going to talk a little bit with Sam Dynowski, who is the chapter head here in Connecticut for the Sierra Club. And when we think back to 1970, we think back, who were the players back then? I mean, Senator Gaylord Nelson and John Lindsay basically teamed up to create this, the largest march. They said it was about 1 million people in New York City. And unfortunately, we have failed largely since then to stop the cooking of our planet. And we want to know why. You know, we are asking lawmakers, why can't we do more? Unfortunately, you know, Connecticut's a little tiny piece of the world economy, but we certainly box above our weight class, and we've got to reinvent ourselves and recommit ourselves and have that energy of 14-year-olds back in 1970 to clean up trophy trout streams and to preserve areas for biodiversity and to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. It was an amazing day. We were young, and we thought we were just doing our little bit, but then when we went home that night and watched it on television, we realized that the whole world was united in a preservation effort unlike anything in the modern-day political scene to preserve our planet. And it was a conservative Republican in Richard Nixon that helped to pass, along with Gaylord Nelson and Morris Udall and other giants of the early preservation and environmental conservation movement, the National Environmental Policy Act. And then Doc Gunther and others here in Connecticut pushed the Connecticut Environmental Policy Act. And it gave us the foundation to fight to preserve our planet. We are aptly named on a spaceship. I think it was Carl Sagan that called it Spaceship Earth. When we look at the space station and the capsules that bring men and women back and forth, scientists, to the space station and travel in space, we realize that their oxygen, their carbon dioxide, their food, their water, their waste, all has to be managed so that we do not poison the tiny little environment that we are living in as astronauts. The Earth is no different. It is a closed system. We are one of the very few planets that we can see anywhere that is able to be in that Goldilocks zone that creates life. And the magnetic core of the Earth creates a magnetic field. The liquid core creates a magnetic field that holds the atmosphere to us, and then that atmosphere is added to it by human activity, and that atmosphere now has so many greenhouse gases in it that it will bake the planet at an increasing rate, even if we were to stop adding carbon dioxide and methane to it today. And our guest on the line is Samantha Dynowski, as I said, the head of the chapter of Sierra Club, and very few groups in the world box at the weight class of the Sierra Club. not only bringing people out into the wild to experience a communing with nature to get us back to some of our primeval feelings about oneness and the Gaia and all of that good stuff, but also to activate the citizenry. So I want to welcome to the studio today Sam Donowski. Sam, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Glad to be here.
You know, you're here on an auspicious day. It was the day after, or 2 days after, the so-called president of the United States, the tyrannical leader named Trump, issued a regressive order to go back to the 1950s and 60s and burn coal. Now, we got rid of the last coal-fired plant in Bridgeport while I was mayor. Adam Wood helped to negotiate a great contract, which closed the coal plant. Now it's going to be a site for economic development for the poor city of Bridgeport. So it's a win-win when you close coal plants. But tell us a little bit about what Trump did.
Yeah, so, I mean, since the first day he's been in office, he's attacked climate action and environmental protection on the first day with numerous executive orders pulling us out, you know, kind of one of the big ones, pulling the U.S. out of the International Climate Treaty, which is the Paris Climate Accord. And so now the U.S. is just one of four nations who's not part of that. We have joined Iran, Syria, and Yemen to halt climate action here.
Bastions of democracy.
Yeah. And you know, there's been more executive orders along the way, including 31 rollbacks of EPA regulations, which are particularly, you know, harmful for Connecticut. I think one of the most alarming is the elimination of the Clean Power Plan, which essentially opens the door to continued use of coal-fired power plants, which are the most polluting energy sources. At the same time, the EPA is moving to dismantle the Good Neighbor Plan, which for Connecticut is a vital policy that helps prevent air pollution from drifting across state lines. And as you noted just last week, Donald Trump issued some executive orders seeking to revive dirty and dangerous energy generation to block states from our own efforts to combat the climate crisis. So we really are.
We're up against the break for commercials, and we'll be right back with Sam Donowski from the Sierra Club right after these messages. Thanks, Sam.
Let's find out what's on Bill's mind today. It's Wake Up with Bill Finch, live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Well, you never really have to ask me what my opinion is. I love having a radio show where I can bash this crazy country we've got right now and get it back on track. You know, since 1970, the first Earth Day, Sam, we're also joined here by Jameson from Hamden. Jameson, I really want to thank you for coming on because, as Sam has explained to me, and your reputation precedes you, you are a lawyer who is passionate about environmental justice. And, you know, I think that somebody said tongue in cheek to me the other day that if you wanted to know where all the environmental problems are, just follow poor people home from work. Most of the poor people in the United States have to live next to refineries and power plants and highways and all these other highly polluting sources. So, Jameson, we're really thankful that you're here today to tell us a little bit about what you're doing up in Hamden.
Yo, thank you for having me, Bill. I greatly appreciate the opportunity, and thank you for creating this platform. What I will say briefly, really quickly, is say, to be quite frank, if you want to follow the most polluted places home, you got to follow the darkest person home, not the poorest person.
Right.
You know? And that goes into a number of factors.
I think you're talking about environmental racism.
Environmental racism, which leads to environmental injustices. You know, there are really kind of five factors that a lot of these communities across the nation have the common denominator, right? Whether you're talking about Hamden, Connecticut, whether you're talking about, you know, what's happening down in the southern belt of Louisiana and Cancer Alley, or whether you're talking about, you know, what's happening in Ironbound, New Jersey. It's really about the targeted environmental burdens that these communities are taking on for the benefit of others, discriminatory environmental policy decisions, you know, the lack of political clout or government, you know, neglect, And then the unequal enforcement of regulations and limited political power representation. Like, those five things are really common denominators you'll find across the nation for communities that are taking on the environmental burden for others' benefits.
And without insulting all of my good friends in the suburbs, you know, if you look at the politics of the state of Connecticut, and I did represent the city of Bridgeport as mayor and as a state senator, and I have to say that my takeaway from those many, many years of service is that Connecticut is of the suburbs, by the suburbs, and for the suburbs. And while some communities have the luxury of talking about plastic bags and grocery bans and things like that, you know, there are people in Connecticut in pockets of poverty in Willimantic and New Haven and Bridgeport and Hamden and places like that where they don't have an option of living amongst the trees with the lawn. And it's just, it isn't fair. And Connecticut has some pretty racist outcomes of its policies that we've got to continue to address.
Absolutely. I think, you know, this is an opportunity for the state to do just that, especially knowing what the federal government is doing right now, which is doing a lot of rollbacks. Now, listening to you and Sam talk earlier about those government rollbacks. And really, you know, when I talk to folks, I really try to encourage them to take on, you know, the 1970s, you know, kind of, you know,
idealism.
Yes, but also the importance of being able to coalition build, right?
Sure.
We have to take this on. What's happening now is the federal government is basically removing themselves and removing, you know, things like preemption, right? Where the federal government may have existed before, they potentially don't now. And so the states can really take this opportunity to step up and create, you know, meaningful regulations with actual teeth that will provide citizens an opportunity to protect themselves and their quality of life by having private rights of actions and other protections built within the regulations that the state would be doing. So this is an opportunity for the state of Connecticut to really stand up, to really protect its citizens through regulations. But in order to do that, we need everybody involved, right? We need the advocates to advocate. We need the activists to be advocated or to be active. We need, you know, attorneys and lawyers to do their work in the legal sector. We need bureaucrats on the inside to continue doing the amazing work that they've been doing in the past, but, you know, even more so. So it has to come from all areas and all factors.
And we're lucky to have Chris Murphy and William Tong fighting so hard on a national level, along with Jim Himes and Joe Courtney and all the wonderful representatives that we have. Rosa DeLauro, John Larson. Absolutely. I don't know if you saw John Larson, Sam, the other day on the internet that went viral, his denunciation of the Republican-controlled committee that was eviscerating Social Security.
Absolutely. And people like Gary Winfield as well at the local level. So, you know, this is just extremely important for us to be able to step up during this time. You know, the Supreme Court has made decisions, in the past that affected things like environmental justice. You know, people don't think the affirmative action ruling had, you know, really to do much with the environment. But to not be able to use race as a factor is a huge deal, because oftentimes race was the factor, the only factor used to place burdens on communities. So to say now that race can't be a factor when it comes to, you know, dispersing funds that make up for those harms, or, you know, creating programs specifically tailored to the communities that were most affected, you know, is a quite slap in the face, to be very frank.
I think you are very frank. I really want to thank you for your frankness, and just transition just a little bit back to Sam to comment on the climate bill, because there is a component of the climate bill that Sierra Club, along with the Connecticut Roundtable and the League of Conservation Voters and others, are pushing that does address the environmental justice issue, as well as solar carports and thermal loops and other things. You know, a lot of times people complain about, oh, you green people are social policy wonks. But you do have to get down into the weeds on where all the electrons come from, right?
I'd say when I think about how we address climate change, I try and break it down into like three simple steps. We got to stop the new. We got to stop digging the hole and developing new fossil fuel burning. We have to transition the things that already exist from fossil fuels to renewables, and that takes some time. And we have to do it equitably, because if we don't, we leave people behind. And we know the fossil fuel economy has resulted in a lot of environmental injustice, and we can't repeat that. So we've got to do those three things. And I think up at the legislature, you know, while the federal government is rolling things back, Connecticut can keep moving progress forward. And we need to do more every year, because we're obviously seeing the climate change and the climate impacts unfold in front of us. We've had the hottest 10 years on record, or the last 10 years. The hottest year on record was last year. And so we can, you know, those might be the coldest years on record going forward. So we have to really confront this with climate mitigation efforts to transition fossil fuels to renewables. And we have to address the impacts that are happening now and making our communities more resilient. And there's three important bills at the legislature this year that everyone should be watching. One is House Bill 5004. I think you called that the climate bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that
no, I call myself the climate. I'm sorry.
And that, fair enough.
504, the climate bill, the House side. Bill.
Yeah. Yes, House Bill 5004. And that's on the mitigation side, as you said, making that transition from fossil fuels to clean energy.
Not enough, SB9, but a good start, right?
Not enough, a good start. SB9, also not enough, but a good start on the resilience, you know, protecting communities from floods and being prepared for the impacts of climate change. And then finally, I'd point to SJ, it's called as a joint resolution 36, which would establish an environmental rights amendment in our state constitution.
And tell us what that amendment would do.
Yeah, what that would do is, like the other rights in our constitution, it would establish our right to clean air, clean water, and a healthy environment. I mean, none of us can survive without those things, but we actually don't have the right to them.
Yeah, well, humans have done some pretty Rube Goldberg things in the past, so we've evolved this tremendously complex society with tremendously complex laws, but we've left out that which gives us life, nature. So listen, you know, there's a lot of things going on. We're going to have to take a break here at the bottom of the hour for news and weather, but there's a lot of things going on in the private sector. I mean, we talk about Trump trying to roll back the clock and go back to the good old days when people were dying of brown lung disease and men were men and women liked it. I mean, we're not going to go back to the 50s, are we? And he's trying to do that with executive orders. It's not really clear whether that'll have any impact at all. But what will have impact is the things we read about in Bloomberg Green and the other places that track investment. And we see investment in renewables around the world, not in America, but in the developing nations and in China, is going like gangbusters. So we're going to come back after the news and weather and talk about some optimistic things we see from Jameson and Sam, leaders in the fight for climate mitigation here in Connecticut, and leaders in the fight for making sure this transition to a green economy is done fairly and doesn't leave people behind. So I want to take a break here at 10:30. We'll be back after the news and weather to talk more to Sam and Jameson.
Fairfield County Talk for a Sunday morning. Wake up with Bill Finch is live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
And welcome back to Wake Up on Sunday mornings. Every Sunday morning from 10 to 11, we try to combat the vast right-wing conspiracy that is out there pumping America full of lies and deceit. But here on this station, you're only going to get unabridged liberal perspective. And nothing less. I want to thank our guest very much, Sam Donowski, who is the head of Sierra Club for Connecticut. I say the head, it's a very democratic organization, and she's very adept at making sure all voices are heard, especially voices from the environmental justice community. And we have a leader in that effort on the phone as well, Jameson C. Davis from Hamden, an environmental justice advocate. I want to thank you both. We talked about the negatives and the crazy stuff that our president's trying to do, turning back the clock. I saw a little thing which kind of sparked something. You know, the Endangered Species Act was passed a long time ago. It's been helpful, and Sierra was very instrumental in passing that. It's helped save many, many species, and I always tell people about the ospreys in Connecticut. On Earth Day in 1970, there was one pair of nesting osprey in Connecticut, and that was in Rocky Neck State Park. I took a field trip with Audubon there to see it. I should have given kudos to Connecticut Audubon and Audubon National as well earlier. They do such great work. And we saw the last remaining pair of nesting ospreys in Connecticut. But because of CEPA, Connecticut Environmental Policy Act, because we ban dangerous pesticides, like we are banning coal power plants, because we know the toxic impact it has on life on our planet, because we did that, when I left office in 2017 out of the mayor's office in Bridgeport, I counted 15 active osprey nests in Bridgeport. Now, we go, this radio station is WICC. It stands for the Industrial Capital of Connecticut, based, licensed out of Bridgeport. The industrial capital of Connecticut still has a lot of industry, still has a lot of polluting sources in its boundaries, and that had 15 nesting osprey pairs. Why is that important? Because humanity depends on biodiversity for its very survival, for medicine, for all kinds of things, not to mention air and water, as Sam mentioned. So right now there's a fight, and they're going to ridicule us, the tree huggers, and I'm a tree hugger. You're a tree hugger, you guys. They're going to criticize us because we're fighting for the spotted salamander who will be forced into extinction potentially because of the lack of biodiversity around development in Arkansas. Sam Jameson, tell us why biodiversity is important to you.
I'll just say the story of the osprey is a testament to what human beings can do when we band together and push for strong policy, and we need to keep doing it. But, you know, we all live in this ecosystem. Humans are part of it. We are not separated from our ecosystem. And so when we recognize that something is going wrong with a species like the osprey or the salamander or bees, that comes back to affect us. So it's really important to be mindful of what's happening. If there's a poison killing bees, those bees can't pollinate our food, and we don't have food. So it's critical that we're paying attention to biodiversity and biodiversity loss and making sure that we're putting the proper protections into place.
Jameson, in the urban environment, why is biodiversity important to us?
Yeah, I would say, you know, biodiversity is important to the environmental justice movement because it's honestly directly tied to the health, resilience, and sustainability of the ecosystems that are at the front lines, where a lot of these marginalized and what I call communities that have been sacrificed rely on. So, for example, you know, healthy ecosystems support human health, right? It purifies water, regulates climate, provides food, medicine, all kind of materials. Then there's this cultural and spiritual connection as well, right? Many indigenous, Black, and other communities of color have the deep cultural, spiritual connection and ties to the land, to the water, and the biodiversity around it. And then nature provides a safety net, right? Does it not? Right? I mean, it creates resilient ecosystems. You know, it helps us against some of these storms that are obviously getting, as we know, getting bigger and stronger due to climate change. And then food sovereignty and traditional practices in terms of the wide range of different species and ecosystems that support like local farming, fishing, foraging practices, you know, so it, biodiversity is extremely important, especially to the environmental justice movement.
Well, you know, you made me think of another thing here. I think we should give a shout out to the tribes who are still trying to keep their culture alive in Connecticut, especially the small but mighty Golden Hill Paugusatsu, their quarter acre reservation on Nichols Avenue in Trumbull is something I point out to my friends all the time about how it's a toehold, but they're not giving up on their culture. And the Shattuckokes up in Kent with Chief Velke are leading the charge to, you know, be the Lorax for us here in Connecticut and remind us that Native cultures lived in harmony with the natural environment, and we need to take a page out of their book. I really thank you, Jameson, for talking about that. I know, Sam, sort of the natural solutions in fighting climate change, the nature-based solutions are in the bill as well. I would hearken back to the time when In my administration during Bridgeport, we planted thousands and thousands of trees in the city, both small seedlings as well as mature street trees, right tree, right place, so it doesn't interfere with the sidewalks and the utility wires. And, you know, it occurs to me that we never see a car ad, especially luxury car ads, that are ever filmed on poor people's streets. They're always really luxurious, tree-lined, mature tree streets. Because trees sell, they add to your property value. Talk about how we could use things as simple as planting trees, Sam and Jameson, that could help us fight climate change.
Yeah, I'll hop in first and pass it to Jameson. But, you know, the heat that's increasingly coming to us from climate change, the places that have the highest heat problems are generally places that don't have trees. So the importance of planting trees to cool down spaces is critical. And the other thing I'd point to, if folks haven't paid any attention to it, is the Mystic River Watershed has been working with the Mashantucket Pequots to learn from the tribe best practices for working with and reviving their ecosystem. It's a really cool partnership, recognizing that the tribes have a long history of shepherding the land.
Go ahead, Jameson.
I'm sorry. No, I was going to say there's not really much more to add there. You know, the simple fact of the matter is that, you know, trees fight climate change. They reduce flooding. And as Sam pointed out, a lot of the areas that suffer from flooding in our communities in Connecticut are the ones that don't have a lot of trees. You know, there's job creation, obviously air quality as well. And then, you know, the kind of heat islands that you think of, you know, the city of New Haven, the city of Bridgeport, Hartford, you know, Danbury, some of these more populated density places in Connecticut that don't have nearly as many canopy places for folks to rest and be safe.
Well, listen, I want to talk a little bit about the politics. We've got another couple minutes here, and then we're going to take a break and hear about a banned book. We try to combat the right wing in this country with this little hour-long radio show, and every other week we talk about a book that the right wing has tried to ban our children from reading. This week it's Looking for Alaska. And I want to just talk about the politics, because I've been at this a long time, and I hope that you have some good closing remarks here about the politics. When the first Earth Day was here, it was led by both parties. There were leaders in both parties. Shame on the Republicans today. Shame, shame, shame. You're not standing up to a tyrant. You're not standing up to a traitor to our American democracy who set loose a mob on our Capitol to overturn an election, who is now declared war on our environment, declared war on our trans friends, declared war on voting rights, declared war on NOAA and NASA and all of the climate-based efforts in our federal government. Where are the voices? Where are the Republican voices? Sam, Jameson, where are they? How do we get them back in the game?
Oh, it's really troublesome. I would agree. I do think, however, in Connecticut in particular, that there, you know, are in every community, people, if you look at the polling, every community cares about the environment. There's a majority of people that care about the environment, that believe in climate change, that are worried about it. And if those folks need to show up, whether their elected official is a Democrat or Republican, and urge action. These elected officials want to get reelected. So when their own constituents come and ask for them to take action, it's going to be hard to say no.
Jameson, how are you going to get the environment front and center in the mayor's race coming up in Hamden?
So there's a saying that if you're not at the table, you're on the menu, right? The thing about environmental justice is that it started off as a civil rights led by Black people, led by, you know, civil rights leaders. Unfortunately, it wasn't taken as serious as it needed to be, and environmental injustices evolved, and it started to creep into now, instead of just places of color, low-income spaces. So now you're talking about potentially white communities as well, and communities that historically have not been taking on the burdens. So, you know, for those who are sitting out on the sidelines, I say to you, it's only a matter of time before it reaches you as well, right? So it's important for everybody to be stepping up and to be part of this conversation. There are a quick three things that I do want to highlight in terms of, you know, what how they can go about doing that. And the first thing I would say is PIRA, right? Chairperson Marissa Gillette has doing a, is doing an awesome job of trying to find ways to incorporate low-income and communities who have been marginalized into the dockets, so that way their opinions and their voices can be on the record. So I highly encourage everybody, especially those who find themselves taking on a high energy burden, to participate in the peer dockets. Deep, and Sarah Wang and Eliza Hines are doing an awesome job right now because Connecticut passed Public Act 23202, I believe, which is an existing environmental justice law, right? But what it does now is that it requires DEEP to write and adopt new regulations on cumulative impacts, right? So for the first time
These are really good tips, and I'm going to ask you to email me some of those names and contacts for any of our listeners who want to contact them. But we're going to have to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with our banned book. And I want to thank you both so much for being on the show. An hour flies by every week. We never have enough time to really talk about all the things we want to talk about. But thank you so much for being on the show. Stay tuned, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and we'll hear from Vic Woodard about the banned book of the week.
Bill's got a lot on his mind, so let's get right to it. You're listening to Wake Up with Bill Finch, live on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
And welcome back to Wake Up, and happy Passover and Palm Sunday to all of those who celebrate. Thank you for tuning in, and I want to turn the mic over to Vic Woodard, who is amazing in her knowledge of libraries. And we just finished Library Week, so let's say Happy Library Week.
We did. Happy Library Week. I cannot thank our local libraries, in particular ours in Orange, but all of them throughout the state, the country, everywhere.
They're fighting.
They do such amazing
They're
work.
Not just quiet little librarians over in the corner giving you your Dewey Decimal numbers. I mean, they're like...
No, though, I'm sure they'd like a little bit of a quiet break, right?
Well, they're under attack.
Yeah.
Under attack. So Library Week this year was probably the most celebrated because of the vast right-wing conspiracy, as Hillary talked about, the Koch brothers and all their front groups, ALEC, other organizations that you may not know about. They're out there pumping the airwaves full of lies and propaganda. Tell us the lies that they've told about the book that you have this week, and tell us about the book.
Yeah, so we read Looking for Alaska by John Green, and this book has been on the American Most Banned Books list in 2012, 2013, 2015, 2016, and 2022, but it didn't stop in 2022. It was, you know, efforts were made again in 2023 and 2024 to ban this book. And, you know, Bill and I were talking earlier. It really is a true coming-of-age type story.
It reminded me of Salinger's book, Catcher on the Rye.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of parallels.
Prep schools, pranks, innocence coming to maturity.
Yeah, one of the things I loved, I watched a video actually this morning. I watched it again, but it was an interview or a video that John Green had posted on TikTok initially. Of course,
He's the author.
Yep. I'm an elder millennial, so we don't TikTok. We Instagram. But, you know, a couple of the things he had said, one that really stuck with me was, I wanted to write about sexuality and substance abuse because it felt true to the characters. When you're a teenager, you're doing all kinds of important things for the first time. And in writing Alaska, I wanted to de-romanticize some of those firsts. And I think that's the piece that's missing. You know, you look at some of the book reports that these organizations put out, and they cherry pick passages from books to make it seem so atrocious.
On page 712, they said the word sex.
I mean, it's crazy, right? And like, you know, the one I was reading earlier, it was literally listing out first offense, second offense. and it's just comical to me to some degree.
The thought police have charges.
Oh, I mean, let's be real here. If you are naive enough to think that your high school student isn't talking about or aware of things like oral sex, drug use, I mean, wake up, right? It's the show. Wake up.
Wake up.
look every around Sunday. You. You're doing a disservice to your kid by limiting their exposure because they're going to get it elsewhere.
I get the impression that the banners are people that just never had very good talks with their kids and just freak out.
Well, they don't want to.
Thinking, and what I get a kick out of, and you know, we have a member of our family that's trans. I get a kick out of this whole thing where they're grooming kids to be sexual deviants.
Yeah, because you know what?
Or they're grooming people to abuse drugs, or they're grooming people to have different identities than what they were born with. Those aren't things you groom people for.
No, yeah, because for sure, we want them to have to go through the agony of what certain people in the public are going to do to them because of who they are and their experiences. No, nobody wants that.
Like, but don't you think these book banning women... the women, what is it called? Moms for Liberty?
Moms for Liberty is one group.
Don't you think they have better things to do with their time?
No, I don't. I don't.
Plant the freaking
garden.
They
must lead very sad, boring lives because this is the stuff that they have to do.
Go see your kid play soccer. Stop worrying about what they're...
it's wild. But, you know, these are the same people who are giving their children unfettered access to the internet but don't want them to read literature. You know, one of the things I found was really interesting was every week I take a look at some of the, in quotation marks, book reports that are put out by some of these organizations.
Other far right wing organizations.
Well, and they're used as resources. They're used as
Christian nationalist organizations, would you say?
In some senses, yeah. They're used as these boilerplate reviews so that people can go to meetings and quote passages
and not have
for
to read the book
they've never read, right? It's like this... appalling process that's happening.
And you know, I'm not going to just say it's just from the right.
No, it's not.
I mean, some of the left have wanted to go after Mark Twain's books because of the N-word that appeared a couple times in his books. The books were written in the 1880s.
Well, we have to look at when things are written, but we also have to look at its impact on civilization and on people. We don't learn by keeping our eyes closed and our ears plugged.
Twain wrote it today, he would have written it differently. But you have to realize it was also a person who was friends with Helen Keller, who was an activist for the downtrodden, who was putting his money where his mouth is and would never have ever done anything that people would ascribe to him. And so I think, how do we all take a chill pill on banning books?
I mean, read. That's how. Read the books.
Celebrate Library
Read
Week.
The books and actually understand their value to society and being better. I will take it as a small win. Booklooks.org, which is one of the reference sites that Moms
Bad guys.
For Liberty, among others, use to try and vilify these books, announced that as of Sunday, March 23rd, 2025, they will no longer be in operation. You know, their claim is that, of course, you know, they've done their duty to God and this isn't the purpose they have to serve anymore. But for me, it really means that's one less organization out there writing these reports and vilifying literature. I'm sure its place will be taken by some other group and we'll hear about them soon. But, you know, it's a small victory when there's one less organization talking about how bad this, you know, set of books is. I do want to just, because I know we're short on time, Bill, but I do just want to say one of the things we talk about every time I'm here is age groups, right? For who is this book appropriate for? Well, if you're going to let your kid watch the Hulu series that has been adapted, then they can read the book, right? But also,
most of these banned books have been on TV, right?
So many of them. But also, I would say,
helps their ratings.
If your child is in high school, right, they're talking about this stuff anyways. Right. They're probably living some of these experiences. There's a lot of discussion in this book about suicide. There's drugs. There's LGBTQ themes. There's sex. Yeah, all of that's there. But don't close your eyes. Don't close your kids' eyes. Let them read the book and have a conversation.
Socially important thing about this book is it got these boys who were friends with a girl who they thought might have driven into a police car on purpose to kill herself. Mm-hmm. They weren't sure, and they investigated it. And they all began to talk about the signs of suicide.
Yep.
Now, teen suicide's not a secret. You know, it's out there.
Seeing it more and more, especially with a lot of the bullying that's happening due to the harassment of our LGBTQ youth. It's appalling. Yeah. We have to educate people on this stuff.
Well, we want to end on a positive note and ask people to be concerned about book banning, to be concerned about how the weaker minorities among us are being treated, especially LGBTQIA+ community. They are the smallest community now being targeted by the far right. They are being vilified. There will be I am sure, bad things that happen to some of those people because of the empowerment they're being given directly from the White House, that these are bad people. They're not bad people. They are our family members. They are our loved ones. And we've got to do everything we can to educate people to be compassionate, yep, to be concerned, to read a book like this, and to pass on these lessons to our kids. They've got to read. They've got to be open-minded.
Have the conversation. Stop taking the easy way out.
Okay, so we're getting off the air. This is a teen book. Buy a house plant for a librarian, and this is good for what group? Age group?
I would say high school.
High school kids.
I wouldn't, you know, have my 10-year-old reading it.
If you read Catcher on the Rye, you could read this book.
Yeah,
it was a great book. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I want to thank Paul in the studio for being our great engineer today. Stay tuned to Dave Rudin, where you'll learn everything in the world about Fairfield County youth sports. Keep those kids on the field. Keep them reading books at halftime. We'll see you next Sunday, everybody, on Wake Up on WICC.